The Oracle Network.
Riddle Me That is a true crime podcast that deals with adult themes. Some episodes explore disturbing topics such as murder, abuse, sexual violence, drug abuse, suicide, and self-harm. Please listen at your own risk. Theories discussed in episodes may not be the opinion of the host.
Welcome back to part 6 of our series on Lavina Lynn Johnson. Where we last left off, we were talking about theories. Let's dive right back in.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely worth talking about. You have so many issues just with the wounds themselves, where Dr. Johnson was convinced that the damage to her teeth indicated something different. Like you said, perhaps maybe the entrance wound was at the back, and then you have the bullet coming out of her mouth from the front, and therefore that would definitely ricochet and break all of the teeth within her skull when they're coming out, right? So that would cause severe damage to the front of her face if the bullet was coming in from the back of the head or from the side of the head, right? You could see it maybe that way. I mean, is it possible to fire this weapon? Sure, it's possible. It just seems incredibly difficult. If you were in that kind of state, shaking, upset, nervous, trying to complete suicide, you know, your mental health is breaking down. That seems like a very difficult weapon to fire in that kind of state. And then you add all these different things, right? The where the bullet would have gone in and out of. Where is the bullet? Where's the piece of her tongue? What was that? What caused that injury, right? Or was that cut out later? We're not sure. So all of these different things with just the gun. And then again, add the 30 other issues at the scene. It's just so complex.
Yeah, and it seems interesting. Like, was the bullet lodged in the tongue? We know that it was a sideways head injury, right? So I don't know if it was sort of on the side to the back, like behind the ear. But if a bullet traveled across, say, from like one hemisphere of the brain going in a downward trajectory, it could get lodged on the other side of the tongue. So it would be interesting to know if the pathologist, and we just don't know this information, did indeed recover a bullet. You know, maybe it wasn't from an M16, maybe it was a 9mm. And that's why that piece or chunk of the tongue was cut out and removed. And it wasn't for some other reason, because why else would it be? I mean, I have no idea. We know the bullet was never recovered. If it was lodged inside Lavina, that might be a reason why the bullet was never recovered.
We also talked about the fact that the bullet could have easily gone into the ground if she was already lying on the ground and someone pulled the trigger point blank against her head. You could see that bullet traveling through her face into the ground and being lodged in the sand or something, and they didn't bother to look for it.
So it seems more likely to us, I think, and a lot of people who look at this case, that Lavina was likely killed with a 9mm. And of course, I'll say it again, I'm not a pathologist, neither is Ashley or Mel, nor are we ballistics experts, but this is what experts have said, and we're just echoing their sentiments. So a 9mm wouldn't have been a weapon that, according to Dr. Johnson, Lavina would have had access to. So it does seem strange that the military wouldn't try to find the bullet. I mean, maybe they did. It just doesn't seem like they went that far out of their way and did this exhaustive investigation. Because seriously, how hard could it be to find the bullet? We mentioned earlier, she's in a closed tent. If there are no bullet holes, then it either had to go out the door of that tent or it had to go into the ground. So it feels like they could have found it if they tried hard enough. And some believe that they did find the bullet and simply didn't put it in the report, because like the potential blood outside the tent, it didn't fit the narrative of suicide. And this all feels potentially deliberate on the part of the military. And there is the report, which I've read the entire thing. It's poorly written up and with a lack of specifics. The pictures show the M16. There isn't the pictures of Lavina's body. I'll make that clear. Those aren't included in what's available to the public. But in the raw sketch, it shows the M16 a distance from the body and not right beside. I do keep coming back to this point because it's really weird. And witnesses say one thing and the sketch of the crime scene says another. And again, the sketch of the crime scene also doesn't depict the bench. So it's unclear what state of is being sketched here. Why was the rifle moved for the sketch? We know the bench was moved early on. So, okay, I would buy that the sketch would include the rifle to the left over Lavina's shoulder as she was found. But yet it's not even on her body or near her body. This isn't at all what witnesses are saying. And this part just really strikes me, and I keep coming back to it.
The report also says that there were matches found, but there was only a lighter, as we previously mentioned.
Details such as this are crucial, either including things that weren't there or not including things that were there. And it appears that the person writing the report was either clueless and careless or was purposefully trying to botch the report. I'm not saying that's what happened, but given everything that we've talked about, I think it's a more than fair question to ask.
Yeah. And if it is that they were just inept when they were doing this investigation, that's a major problem too, because the end result's the same. You don't have the answers that you need or the evidence that you need to make a conclusion in this case. And yet they were so confident and so easily able to make a ruling of a suicide in Iraq. When she gets back stateside, no one seems to be able to definitively make that conclusion. So that alone shows the military should have done more to get more information recorded in an accurate way so that there was an easy way to prove this is a suicide.
So the Johnsons and many others thought that the scene looked staged. The burned diary entries or the Bible, like we said, we don't know with any high degree of certainty what it was, and the use of accelerant. Why would Lavina set herself on fire? And it appeared to the Johnsons that the army was covering it up. Like we keep coming back to, the gloves on the hands that were passed off as a necessity without any further information. And then the urging to have Lavina's body cremated as well as a closed casket. But obviously the Johnsons declined because they wanted to give their daughter a proper burial. And Ashley mentioned, you know, that seeing of your loved one for the last time. Obviously, this is something the Johnsons wanted to experience. And we might not be talking about the case today if the Johnsons had decided to cremate Lavina's body. It was in seeing the apparent damage to her face. And when I say damage to her face, it's like more damage in certain places and less in others, right? So we've spoken about the nose that was broken and reset, the bruises and abrasions, which would kind of point towards a struggle, but also the lack of damage with regards to the bullet wounds. So I think all the alarm bells went off for the Johnsons.
Yeah, of course they did. You know, and then part of me is going, well, could you have your nose broken in a suicide? Like the pressure of the blow break the nose? I mean, I don't know, maybe. But once you see those bruises and abrasions too, it seems like someone could have easily hit her in the face and incapacitated her and then done what they wanted with her. So that's what really bothers me. And again, maybe it was a suicide. It just doesn't seem likely. And it definitely did not receive the investigation that it needs, because all of these other things, like you said, those Bible or journal pages, the accelerant, her physical body, the way it was found and the damage it was done to her body doesn't line up with a suicide.
And just to cover every angle, let's go ahead and discuss some of the other theories that are in regards to the timing of the death and even the manner of death. It is possible that Lavina was killed in the evening by asphyxiation or some other means and shot later to cover it up. It's also possible that she was shot in the evening or early morning hours, and then there was a second gunshot in the morning to stage the scene. We have no accurate time of death, so all this seems well within the realm of possibility.
And I think one of the reasons that this does make sense as a possible story is that lividity that you see on the body. On the left side of her body, if I'm recalling correctly, there was lividity, or the pooling of blood that occurs once somebody has passed away and they've been left in the position where they died, right? The blood starts to pool and settle and actually clot in those areas. So you see that discoloration on the body, but then she's found on her back and there's not the lividity there. It's on the left side of her body. So my very first question was, did they roll her over? Did they move her? And when you guys said, absolutely not, every witness said, we did not touch her, we did not move her, that actually points towards, was she killed somewhere else? Did the fire get staged as an attempt to maybe ruin some of the physical evidence? And then you have this staged suicide. Yeah, actually that might even be more possible than the physical assault and then a shooting in the tent.
And we are going on the timeline of the military here. And I'm not saying that they're inaccurate. And I'm not saying that all these statements are correct, but we're operating under the presupposition that this timeline of events is accurate, right? And this is the institution, the same institution that could potentially be covering this up. So if we're assuming that this timeline around 1:20 or 1:30 a.m. is when Lavina died, and then the last time she was seen with the male soldier, that friend of hers, when they left the PX, the fast food place, was around midnight. It was between, I think, 11:45 and 12:15 that he got back to his room. So it is possible. Like, we have to at least entertain the idea that maybe some of those accounts or stories, the timeline is off. Maybe the last time he saw Lavina was 9 p.m. And they changed the times on it because this would line up, right? So if it wasn't nine, then that would explain fixed lividity on her left side and then a staging later. I'm not saying that like these accounts are incorrect, but we at least have to entertain the possibility that this institution that we believe may be covering up a murder may also be doctoring the facts, may also be misleading with regards to the timeline. Because if we take that timeline out of operation and we say it could have happened earlier, then this could explain the lividity and maybe the staging of the scene. So there was also the matter of a general, and I'm going to call him General Bob. You can look up his real name if you choose. I don't personally put much weight on this part of the theory, so I don't want to drag his name through the mud. But it was reported that he was legally separated from his wife, but was having an affair or multiple affairs with civilian women, and he was told to cut it out. Even though he was close to retirement, the general allegedly didn't want to obey this order, and it was theorized that Lavina saw him with a woman and General Bob killed her so that she wouldn't report him. Personally, this seems kind of implausible. Like, if the general is going to go out in public with this woman, given this threat of getting caught, is he really going to murder anyone he comes in contact with whom he recognizes?
I mean, that's the thing. When you're having an affair, you're putting yourself at a huge risk because a lot of times you're around the society that knows you, right? Someone's going to be out at the same restaurant or whatever. So I think you assume that risk, and it's impossible to say, I'm just going to execute anybody who happens to see me in the, you know, while I'm out with this woman or whatever. There definitely is a thing where, right, affairs and everything else are supposedly very looked down upon in the military, but I have a lot of military friends and a lot of people within the military who have been less than faithful. And so it's like, yeah, there's this chivalry rule, chivalrous rule, but is that really something that is hardcore followed through with? I think it's something used in conjunction when there's another problem. It's something to slap on and say like, oh, now we're kicking him out because look at all these things. And this is something else that he or she is doing. But I'm not sure that they're really chasing down every person having an affair and kicking them out of the military. So they're definitely not chasing down
every single one because there are a lot. The only thing that I will add is that if you are caught and somebody decides to pursue it, and a general would make a very nice target, it would be a hard target, but it's a nice target. If you're convicted of having an affair in the military, you could be dishonorably discharged. That means as a general, you lose your rank, you lose your pension, you lose everything. So everything that this general has worked for in his multiple decades long career, most likely, was at risk. So is it possible, if this theory is even remotely founded in fact, is it possible that he would stoop to murder to prevent that from happening? I feel like crazier things have happened, so it could be a possibility. I mean, that's his entire life and life after the military at risk there.
But why go out in public? If you're that worried about people discovering you, you're right close to a base. Why are you going out in public? And
people, this is stupid, Jules. But
I will say this too. Yeah. You also have, if you have men or women in power who are entitled to whatever they want. And some of the reasons that they're having an affair is because I get what I want when I want it. And so I think there's that mentality of like, I'm above reproach. Mm-hmm. And so I conduct myself in this kind of flamboyant way. Yes. Like, you know, you think about someone who comes on to you who's married or something like that, and you're like, he's done this before. Wow. Because there's a confidence and an air. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, this is not his first rodeo, having this plan and this very thorough approach to cheating on his significant other. So, I mean, I could see that kind of cockiness and brazenness. And I could also see the only thing that makes this a little bit more plausible is that she is a small woman, and that if he has that attitude, it would be that same, like, you are a nuisance and like easy disposable person versus like, mm-hmm. I don't know, a big old man who finds him having an affair. I could see it being a very different reaction.
What would make him think that Lavina would even say anything? This is a general, and this is somebody who wouldn't even complain about a battle buddy. I would think, right, he could easily intimidate this young soldier to go to the extreme. And like, she never even told anybody that she saw him in a compromising position. This isn't proven to, mm-hmm, like any degree, which I can tell. This is just a rumor, right? So if Lavina had seen this, I believe she would have told one of her family. She just talked to them that day, told them about the tree. you know, saying, hey, I saw a general in a compromising position and I think I'm in trouble, I think would be a natural thing to say. She hasn't even said anything like this. And I think a man of his position would very much be able to intimidate somebody in her position into staying silent.
Is she the one? Is he the same one that yelled at her?
We don't know this information.
Okay. Okay. Because I'm wondering, I was going to say, if it's the same one, I could see him already being like, oh, this little turd is going to cause me problems on many levels. Do you know what I mean? Where she, oh, she, now she's turning me up from yelling at her, you know, where he's just already irritated with her. And so that's my general impression of a, you know, a big general. Yeah. I could see him, you know, throwing his weight around. But again, I think this is quite extreme when you talk about this, right? Like, I'd rather take my chances and call you a liar and discredit you and ruin your character credibility and make up, you know, lies about you and just smear you through the mud because I'm a general and they're going to listen to me and not you. So it's like, I just don't see him killing her.
They would destroy her character. This is a patriarchal institution. This is a young woman who we know has just been diagnosed with an STD. You think that they're not going, and she's told people about this. So this is part of public knowledge. They will destroy her character and credibility. I think he would feel pretty comfortable in the fact that he could intimidate her into silence, or even if she did speak out, they're going to take his word over hers. And she's someone that won't rock the boat. She won't ask for a battle buddy. She's not going to go forward and be like, hey, I saw him out with a woman. That just isn't who Lavina is.
And that's the approach that all these institutions take. So if you're coming forward with a sexual assault on a college campus, if you're one of the gymnasts, if you're one of this and that, it's literally, she's mentally ill. She's crazy. She's a whore, whatever it is. I mean, they have canned stories that they come at survivors with. So, and so if there was going to be any kind of claim or allegation or witnessing of some sexual event, somehow she would get destroyed. I mean, that's the basic 101. And so that would be an easier approach than murdering someone and hoping to get away with that versus hoping to get away with an affair.
And we have to believe if any general is going to go forward with something like this, say, let's just entertain it for a moment that he indeed did this. Well, I believe that he would have a conversation with Lavina first and assess the risk, right? It's going to be all about risk assessment. Is this individual going to go forward? And we know that Lavina didn't want people to see her crack when she was doing training, doing all those push-ups. She very much wanted to appear a certain way to those in power. She wanted to be seen as tough and not someone who rocks the boat. So if a general did have a conversation with Lavina about this, I'm very sure that she would have said something along the lines of, it's not my business to get involved. Like, I'll keep my mouth shut, because that just seemed to be the type of person that she was. Why would she be out there blowing the whistle? This isn't something that directly affects her or something that directly affects his ability to do his job. It's an ethical issue that I don't feel like is that pertinent to her that she needs to raise her hand and make herself a martyr over, because I think she'd be very aware that they would destroy her over this.
So according to Margot, this theory has not really been looked into, and she didn't want to speak to it personally, but she did say that the man who was helping the Johnson family from the legal side wrote an entire open letter to Facebook about his theory about this general. So there's more to, I would like to read that open letter if it's still out there. I'll just leave it at that.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah, I would love to see what is included in that letter. Because if you're putting in writing out there on the internet, better have something to back it up, because people could come for you.
Yeah, it's sort of the abbreviated version that's come up in all the different sources and stuff. I've never read the actual Facebook open letter. Mm-hmm. But from what I've read, there's just not enough to convince me that somebody who's going to be so flippant to go out in public is going to kill over this. This is a guy in the position of general, even if he's been warned and he goes and does this. Like, yeah, his career is on the line, but are they going to like come for a general this close to retirement over an affair when he's literally separated with his wife? Maybe if he's got some enemies, but it just doesn't seem likely. We know that, you know, older white men of that generation in institutions like the military tend to fall upwards. Was he at risk? Sure, maybe, but I'm sure he was pretty confident in his ability to manipulate any situation in his favor, especially with somebody young like Lavina. So I don't know. It's that one. I'd like to read the open letter, but it still just doesn't really line up for me. So given what we know about Lavina, I think she would have feared retribution, but we needed to include this bit about the general in here. I don't personally, obviously we've discussed this, I don't find it to be that compelling. I think the murder was sexually motivated and that the offenders killed Lavina to cover up the crime. Personally, I think there could be more than one offender. Total speculation, but what do you both think?
I think someone got angry that, like you said, you have a bunch of testosterone. You've got a lot of aggressive attitudes. We're in the middle of a war zone. You know what I mean? And I see this young woman who I want to have control over. And that's what sexual assault is about. And either I approached her for consensual sex and she denied me, and then that turned me to be aggressive towards her, or I simply said, that's mine for the taking. And I wanted to dominate her for a power play, right? Maybe she intimidated me during exercise or whatever it was that we were doing. I think someone was waiting to attack her and hurt her. And it could have been the man walking her back. I always tell people, you know, like, it's never the stranger in the bushes. It's the people you trust. So I think it could have been that friend. I'm more inclined to think that friend walked her halfway and was humiliated that he didn't walk her all the way to her barracks. And as a friend just said, I walked her all the way there, like out of panic. And someone saw her alone and took advantage of the opportunity. That's what I think. And then they panicked. Then they staged it to look like a suicide when honestly, the staging was horrific. I don't understand how easily it was determined a suicide.
I agree. I don't understand how this could have been viewed as solely a suicide. I don't understand how the other end of the spectrum wasn't even a consideration. It wasn't even a blip on the radar, because none of the evidence found at the crime scene makes sense. It's like the person who saw her, attacked her, killed her, panicked. And they were like, I'm just going to throw all these things in here. I'm going to set a couple fires. I'm going to set her on fire. I'm going to put a bench over her. And it's complete chaos. So there's no wonder we don't know what exactly happened. But I definitely agree with you, Jules, that it was sexually motivated, given the trauma to her genitals.
I just question, like, if there was one or two people involved in the cover-up part of it, because the staging of the scene seems to require, mm-hmm. I mean, it's horrific, but it would have had to have gone on over mm-hmm. a period of time. This individual may have been seen, may have recruited another individual to assist them, is sort of what I'm thinking, because I don't necessarily think one person could have done this all on their own without some kind of help, especially help in constructing this narrative. I think that it very well could have been one person that perpetrated the crime, but I think when it comes to the staging of the scene, I think that there's more likely to be more than one individual involved in that, just because a lot of times people will have each other's backs. And we think that it sounds a little bit crazy, but when you're in these life and death situations in a war zone, I think that there's people who will step up in situations that maybe when you're on in regular civilian life, they wouldn't step up to help you with. And I mean, I could be off base there, but that's just more my gut instinct.
No, I agree with that too. I think the initial attack, the initial murder, if it was asphyxiation, was done by one person. But I do think there's a potential for another person. Hey man, something really went wrong. I need your help. Can you come with me? And yeah, that whole brothers in arms thing, we got each other's backs. We're going to do whatever we can to protect our own. There was probably no hesitation if there was a second person involved.
Because I feel like that wound stat was an afterthought. I don't feel like the dude came equipped with wound stat. I feel like this was maybe a conversation that was had. Like, hey, after the fact, this was something, they're going to find my DNA in her. What do I do? And someone went, ooh, light bulb, wound stat.
And burner. Yeah, let's do this. Let's burn her. Let's, because there was burns and under genitals. So it could have been that wound stat that burned, or it could have been added flames there too with an accelerant. So it's like, there definitely was this intent to stage and kind of figure out. And that lividity, again, she was resting somewhere while they're out planning and trying to figure out what's going to happen here.
Yeah. And the burning of the hands is also interesting. So we've got burning of, you know, the genitals, the back of her, there's the inside of her thigh. I think some on her back. So any areas where there may have been DNA, like if Lavina scratched her attacker, well, let's burn her hands because maybe we can destroy that DNA underneath her fingernails. That explains the burns on the hand. And then we've got either accelerant and flames used to burn the genital area, or it was the wound stat that caused that damage. I'm not entirely sure. Dr. Johnson believed it could have been lye. So we could have multiple compounds that are used here to try to destroy evidence, which makes me more inclined to believe it's not just one individual. This is at least two people putting their heads together, trying to come to a solution about how to destroy the evidence and how to stage this scene.
So we've covered our theories, but there is still one last theory out there and we have discussed it in detail throughout, as it is the military's narrative, and that is theory number three, that Lavina Johnson did, in fact, complete suicide. For reasons we have already mentioned in the military report, if it's accurate, this theory seems plausible, but I don't know how likely it is given the evidence. Lavina had a loving family, and earlier that day, she had told her mom to wait for her to get home before they decorated the Christmas tree because she wanted to be a part of that. It was something that was important to her. It meant something to her. It was special. So why would she be making future plans before heading to a contractor's tent to complete suicide? Some military reports say her affect and her demeanor changed and that Lavina had become more depressed, was giving away her possessions, she was eating a lot of ice cream. Her commanding officer, however, paints a different picture and recalls her being a person who was excited, full of life, the Lavina that everybody knew, not this depressed Lavina who maybe was in a really dark place and contemplating something tragic.
So I've read every single one of the witness reports by friends and fellow soldiers, and I can't say one way or the other with a high, high degree of certainty, but I definitely lean very strongly towards murder, given the strange staging, the evidence, the state of the body, positioning of the body, and the gun at the scene. These are all suspect. And due to the way the family was treated by the military, however, I can't discount the possibility, we can only speak in probabilities here, that Lavina did in fact end her life, though I believe that the probability is very, very low and that this explanation is less likely than it being murder.
I agree so much. And then remember, she had just gone to the exchange or the commissary or whatever you call it, you know, the PX that was over there. And so she was buying things like ChapStick is an investment. Okay, people, I've got 25 tubes in different places, but that tube is supposedly going to last me for a while. There's all of these things, you know, she's there buying treats and she's buying ChapStick. And so if I'm going to send you to your dorm room or to your barracks, and I'm going to then go complete suicide, like this is not something you do in like a 2-minute time frame. You know, like you have to plan. I've got to figure out where I want to put my body. I need to, you know, am I going to write a letter? All of these things take some planning time. Literally, we're saying she went and purchased all these items. She's hanging out with a friend and then literally walks to this tent and ends her life. It just seems odd. It seems now if you had told me she'd been alone all night, you had said there had been like isolation leading up to this. She's outgoing, being social and buying things a couple minutes before she dies.
And I will speak from personal experience. I have had suicidal ideation. I have contemplated. I had a letter written at one point. I didn't do it, clearly, because I'm still sitting here talking to both of you. But I didn't want to be around anybody. It was painful just to be at work in the office with people that I loved. I don't think there's any possible way that she did this to herself. She wanted to be around people. She was eating ice cream. She was having fun. She was hanging out with friends. She went to the PX. If you are that intent on ending your life, that is your only focus. That's all you can think about. No amount of hanging out with friends or going to the PX or anything is going to distract you from that narrative that's inside your head. So I don't believe it for an instant. There's no way in my mind.
And I also think she was getting ready to go home. And there was so much, she had put so much excitement and emphasis on that. And I think she would have maybe even told her parents, like, I don't know that I'm coming home. You know, like, you guys better go ahead and decorate the tree. And like, I hope, you know, if I'm not home for Christmas, like I probably will be, but if I'm not home for Christmas, like I want y'all to have an amazing Christmas. It's going to be a great year for you guys. Like, you know, I might get delayed here in Iraq. Like, I feel like there would be a different conversation. Not that I won't be there, but I think there'd be this kind of permission granted to her mother to say, you know what? You do the tree without me.
She said, wait for me, wait to do the tree.
Yep.
They'd be like, oh, she told us to do the tree. And we know how much she loves this. Mm-hmm. She was saying goodbye. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you go, oh, crap. She was telling us she's not going to be here. Yep.
I 100% agree. I think that Lavina didn't complete suicide. I think even if she was struggling, even if she was depressed, I don't think that the evidence points towards her completing suicide in any way, shape or form. But I will play devil's advocate here in that we're painting it as though people always pre-plan suicides, always write notes. In fact, we know from survivors of suicide, oftentimes it is a split second decision. This isn't something that somebody plans out. This isn't something that somebody is going, okay, I'm going to do this. A lot of times it's something that strikes them in that moment. They make an action and they leave no clues behind. So do I think that happened here? Absolutely not. But I just think it's a fair point that we share that, because it isn't accurate to say all people are planning and pre-planning and her parents would have had an indication, because we don't know that for sure. But in this case, just nothing really, in my opinion, points towards suicide.
Yeah, those are good points. Very true. Very true.
Yeah. And I think there's just the big deal that was made about Lavina smoking. You know, I worked in a restaurant when I was younger and I remember not getting a break if you didn't smoke. So it was like, I went in my early 20s, I was like, okay, well, this just seems like a good idea, right? I'm going to smoke because I want to take a break, and you get to go have a breather. You can chit chat, have like a social moment with your friends, and then you go back. And from what I've heard in the military, it's the same thing. If you're a smoker, you can take a break.
I mean, I can remember people that I worked with who smoked and I felt like they were not in the office as much as I would have liked because they were constantly stepping away for a smoke. So yeah, I think it's entirely plausible that she just thought it was an opportunity to get outside, take a break, breathe for 10 minutes before she had to go back into this internet cafe and deal with people who were maybe giving her a hard time. It's a chance to escape. So I get it.
And it's also, yes. don't people say too, it's like an appetite suppressor too. So like if you're eating, you know, if you're like struggling with your eating and things mm-hmm. like that, like it's very possible that she was like, yeah, one, peer pressure, like just to hang out with people and like want to be around socially, but also like maybe that'll help me stop eating so much because I'll start smoking and that'll be better. So that's possible too.
That's a good point, because it's true. A lot of people are like, hey, can lose a few pounds if I'm smoking. And it's anytime anyone who's ever quit smoking, like myself included, knows when you quit, it is the worst because you are so hungry all the time. You just want to eat everything and you don't realize how much it suppresses your appetite until you quit. So yeah, Lavina might've been like, hey, I've maybe been going a little crazy with the ice cream, but if I, you know, have a cigarette here and there, I'm just not as hungry. And I think, yeah, that's a really, really good thing to bring up, Ash. So initially when I watched the documentary and I read other sources, I didn't believe that suicide was possible. But because of the statements by fellow soldiers, I can't rule it out as a possibility, though I think that it is a very minute possibility. Lavina's father, Dr. Johnson, was trained in spotting the signs, and he saw none in his daughter, neither did the rest of her family. Though I will point out, I did speak to forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Shaham Das, and I asked him about that sort of thing. And he said, you know, just because he's used to pointing that out in other people doesn't mean he's going to spot the signs in his own daughter. He's like, if it was my children, you know, I wouldn't necessarily trust that I would be able to spot the signs, because we do have those blinders on and we do look at our loved ones in a different way than we do approach our patients. So that's also a possibility. I'm not saying that's the case here, but it's fair to point out that was what he had said about that. So we know Lavina, she was full of life when she made her last call. We just talked about her making plans for her future, wanting to go home for Christmas. We do know that she had that breakup she was struggling with, that she'd recently been diagnosed with the STD, but how impactful that actually was on Lavina's mental health, this all remains in question. As reports from the witnesses with regards to her state of her mental health and how she was in the days and weeks leading up to her death, they vary wildly.
Yeah, and you're right. I think you did hit a very important topic. Like Dr. Johnson, I think, is a very incredibly intelligent man. I think he's very well versed in these different types of incidents. But I do think that our children are smart and they try to shield us from things that are occurring to them. So like, you know, you hear about, you know, even in the Nasser case, one of the dads that his daughter was sexually abused, right? He was a police officer. And one of the things he said in his testimony was like, how did I not know? Like, I work with sexual predators. I'm the person who arrests them. And how did I not know that my baby was a victim when I deal with this? So I think you are right that we do try to protect our parents from different things, and that no matter how well-versed we are in a given topic, like myself as, you know, homicide or sexual assault, that I may not see the signs in my daughter because I'm thinking that I'm so well-educated in that area that I have the ability to protect her from those things. And in all essence, as a parent, you can only do so much. And when you're not with your kids, you don't get the control that you pray and wish you could have over them all the time. And so it is possible that one, she protected him, and two, he just didn't see signs, or she wasn't showing them purposefully. But the rest of it, you know, like she was full of life. An STD is an STD, right? It's shameful when you first find out, you're embarrassed, you beat yourself up, and then you go, okay, I have medicine, I'm going to be fine. And so is that worth ending your life? No, it's something you're going to have to deal with your future partner, or it's something that's going to resolve itself.
The Army has gone on to rule some very suspicious deaths as suicide. So unfortunately, the Johnsons are not alone in their fight for justice. And sadly, the military does have a very high suicide rate. The stat is that approximately 22 military members or veterans complete suicide per day. Given everything that we've discussed, the evidence that we have, reports, witness statements, I can't fully get on board with the military's ruling that Lavina's death was in fact a suicide. Like we've said, it's a possibility, but it's a very, very small one. There are simply too many questions that point in a different direction, like the bench, the fires that were set, the damage to her face, the trauma to her genitals, and there are not enough answers, I feel, to justify their conclusion that she did complete suicide, especially when the round from the M16 that she supposedly used was never recovered, and the position in which her body was found didn't make sense either. The investigation was incomplete, to say the least, and not nearly as thorough as one would expect for a military investigation. People, again, who thrive on details. To me, this investigation reads like they walked in and decided pretty much right off the bat that her death was a suicide. The investigation was completed just enough to check the box to support that narrative, and there was no real effort made to determine the actual cause.
So that concludes the theories. There are so many cases in the military of women like Lavina who've had suspicious deaths while overseas. Like we've mentioned earlier, half the women who died overseas, they didn't die in combat. And a large number of their deaths were suicide or ruled a suicide. And over half of those deaths were deemed as suspicious upon closer examination. So this appears to be a pervasive problem, a culture that's rife with toxic masculinity that discourages women from coming forward after they've experienced sexual assault or abuse. Their silence is encouraged, and they're told that they are less than, that they are not soldiers, they're simply soul or half a soldier, or that at least appeared to be the experience of Lavina, as per Dr. Johnson.
And one of the other things that goes beyond this, a woman who's not sexually assaulted in the military is still existing in this toxic masculinity environment. So, and so are men in the military. You want to know why suicide is so high is because mental health is viewed as a weakness. It's viewed as a crutch. So men and women alike, sexual abuse or not, this structure creates these ideas of pain, you know, like sweat is pain leaving your body, and pull yourself up by your bootstraps and suck it up, soldier. Do you know what I mean? Like, get with it, get tough. All of these things, there's moments as human beings where you can't be a robot, where you're struggling with something. You're struggling with a mental illness. You're struggling with depression. You're struggling with stress. You're struggling with hormones, whatever it is. And when you're told you don't have a safe space to express any of that, or else you're viewed as weak or a problem or a burden or a liability, that creates this silence. And silence occurs for sexual assault too. We've talked about that throughout this. You want to know why there's so many suicides. It's because people aren't allowed to vocalize the truth of what's going on in their minds and in their lives. And they're told to get on with it. And there comes a point where you can't get on with it anymore. And when you're scared to reach out and get the resources that may or may not exist for you to get help, you're desperate. And so suicide becomes a very viable option for so many. They're not supported while they're in the military. And then when they return home, they're definitely not supported. They're turned out and supposed to be normal when they've been in these kind of bizarre, stressful, sometimes traumatic situations. Once your service is done, you're just dropped off. So it's like, I think men, women alike, sexual assault or not, the environment breeds, shut your mouth, get tough. And if you got a problem, deal with it by yourself. And a lot of people can't do that.
So this has to be incredibly difficult to be a woman in the military, already up against such adversity, but to have the men around you treat you as though you're less than, which seemed to be the case for Lavina, because that's what Dr. Johnson says, and to potentially be treated like a sexual object, which I know happens to many women in the military, and that would be really devastating. Of course, not representative of all men in the military. We're definitely not saying that. But unfortunately, it does seem to be the experience of many women. But at least the military is attempting to make strides and to change the culture from within. At least that was sort of the impression that Margot had given me when I'd spoken to her about that. But clearly, there's still a long, long way to go.
Absolutely, there's a long way to go. You do see big social strides being made in the military. There is some attempt to put more emphasis on mental health, to create a safer space for men and women alike, to allow a more inclusive representation of who's allowed to serve in the military. So all of that is making these really great advancements. But the reality is that it's a broken system that's going to take a lot of time. Change is hard and change is scary, and change is often opposed by many people who are being asked to change and to kind of wake up to the realities around them. I do think, like you said, it's important to emphasize most men are incredible allies to the women who serve alongside them. And I don't care if this is military, law enforcement, a survivor on a college campus, whatever it is, men are our greatest resources when they're willing to stand up and speak up with us. It's a small group of men who believe they're entitled to do what they want, and that includes hurting the people around them. And so we don't have, you know, 75% of men perpetrating sexual assault. You have a small, tiny, tiny percentage of men who think they have a right to whatever they want, including someone else's body without their consent. And they're often serial perpetrators. So shout out to any and every human and man, right? But human who creates themselves as a safe space and as somebody who's going to be an ally to people who are struggling with mental health, with sexual abuse, whatever it is. That's what we need more of. And we need more people willing to say
that I wasn't even prepared to speak about anything that I had experienced until those two friends of mine confronted me about my own assault. And it was that instant that kind of gave me the shove in the right direction, not only to seek treatment for my own mental health issues, just not how it necessarily pertained to the assault, but just in general, just the effects of being in the military in general. And honestly, how it kind of messed with my head, because when I signed up, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. So it was 9 years of just constantly being pushed. And then a few years ago, I'm part of a group of female Air Force Academy graduates, and they started a smaller committee to talk about sexual assault, to compile facts, to gather information, and present it to leadership in the military so that we can hopefully get this conversation talked about, how we can help our service members, men and women, talk about it, heal from it, and just change this, like you said, a broken system, because it is so broken. And the only issue I can see is that there are still plenty of people in who don't see it as a broken thing. And so it's going to take time for those people to either be convinced or for them to leave so that real change can actually happen and these bigger problems can be addressed so that the military can be the safe, inspiring, wonderful organization that we all believe it should be. But right now, it's not.
Yeah, as scary as like the new generation is, they like eat Tide Pods and stuff like this. The hope of what's going on with this new generation is really, to me, inspiring, because there's permission now to stand up and believe in things and to fight for things like the Me Too movement, the Black Lives Matters movement. Whether you agree with any of this or not, it's permission to stand up on these important social issues and have a voice when you're a young kid, when you're a teenager, when you're a young woman or a young man. And so I think as we start to see that generation that's more inclusive, that's more understanding, that's willing to talk about really tough issues, maybe we'll see change in a lot of these different areas.
Yeah, true change happens over time, right? Unfortunately, we all hope that it happens instantaneously, but it happens through education. And oftentimes it's young people educating their parents and then these generations coming up. And then we see change in institutions, but this isn't a thing that happens overnight, because like Mel brought up, there's a bunch of people who are at the top who are responsible for the culture of these institutions. So until you get other people in these positions of power in said institutions, you're not going to see change. Because, I mean, you can try at the lower levels to bring change, but until it's agreed upon at those top levels, you're just not going to see it trickle down. So I do have faith that the military can make those strides and can make those improvements. But unfortunately, we aren't going to see, you know, the fruits of all of the work that they're putting in until far later. You know, maybe in 10 years, we're going to see a lot more positive and inclusive climate where men and women do feel protected from things like harassment and sexual assault. But it's just unfortunate that the people who are caught in those situations now and who are caught in those situations in the past, trying to get justice for what happened to those individuals can be very, very difficult and very trying. So that concludes the case of Private First Class Lavina Lynn Johnson, a case that is very worthy of justice. I really hope that the Johnsons see justice for their daughter. They've been pushing since her death in 2005, and this family and so many others deserve to have answers. Mel, Ashley, do either of you have any parting thoughts on the case of Lavina Lynn Johnson?
I mean, I think it's what we've been saying this whole time. My heart just goes out to this family, but beyond that, to the many, many, many families who allow us to have their sons and daughters in the military. And they pray that they're protected and that they're safe and that may not get answers. Like we talked about, Dr. Johnson had the credentials to demand answers and be heard. But when you talk about families, especially people of color, and you have, women, and you have people who aren't as represented, they may not have the social or financial status, right, to get their voice heard. So many families suffer these types of injustices in and out of the military. So just my prayers to families that are struggling and that are wondering, what was the real story? Or did I get the real story? It's an ongoing trauma to lose somebody. But when it's complicated with questions, it's difficult to kind of fathom what
people who did not hold themselves to the standards that we would expect from a person who raised their right hand and swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States and protect our country with all the benefits that come from signing that dotted line. There are a lot. There are reasons why people sign up for the military. I get that. I was one. The unfortunate part of this is we don't know what happened to Lavina. There are other families out there who are also suffering from this same fate. And at this point, I feel like people who may not have the knowledge or the awareness, our job is to listen. If somebody feels like there's an injustice, we need to listen instead of shutting them down. And I say that as a collective we, including the military. If a family that is in pain is coming to you with questions about what happened to their family member, it is your job to listen. And stop burying stuff if that's indeed what happened, because it's inexcusable.
I also think I can speak for all three of us for an appreciation and a thank you, not to Mel, first of all, for your service, and to all the brave men and women who have stepped up and served in our incredible, our military is an incredible institution. It's just has its flaws. But definitely, please, I hope anyone who's listening, as a very proud Marine's daughter, someone who was shot and injured 5 times in Vietnam with 2 Purple Hearts, I am a huge fan of our military. It just breaks my heart that someone who's so brave would ever suffer anything other than utmost respect and honor for serving our country. And I also think it's important to let people know that if you are struggling and you're a veteran, you earned the right to be heard. And there are people who care and are listening and who want the not only your story to be heard, but other people's story to be heard. So if you're struggling and you're a veteran, there is a crisis hotline where 24/7, there is someone listening and able to help you with those, you know, with any struggles that you're facing. That number is 1-800-273-8255. You simply press 1 and there is someone available to talk to you. So my prayers go out and my appreciation goes out. And I know that all three of us say thank you to the men and women who so proudly have served our military.
Well said, Ashley. I think that's really great that you shared that information. You shared that number. And we definitely, all three of us, feel the same way about the military. The men and women who serve America, I'm not even American, but the men and women who serve America, you know, I think it's a very brave undertaking. I think so many people do it, you know, like Mel had said, for education. And I think there's many, many reasons to be part of something, to feel like the sense of duty and valor and all these things that being a part of any branch of the military can make you feel. And there are very real consequences. And with any institution, it's like, we're not going to say that the entire thing is bad. We're not saying that at all. We're just saying the changes need to be made. And when it comes to investigations and protection of women and men, there's some strides that need to be taken. And I've got confidence that the military will make these changes in time. But what we've been examining is a case that happened in 2005 and the military's response to it. And it leaves something to be desired.
That concludes the main episodes of our series on Lavina Lynn Johnson. Stay tuned next week for expert episodes. I want to thank you all for listening. I would love to hear from you all. If any of you have anything to say about the case, any thoughts, you can reach out to me at riddlemethatpod@gmail.com. Or I'm really, really active on Twitter, so please follow me. I'll follow you back at Podcast Riddle. And I just wanted to let you all know, if you're unaware, I don't have a Riddle Me That Patreon, but I have a Patreon with Dr. Ashley Wellman. So at the $3 level, you get early access, ad-free episodes. At the $5 level, there's a Jules and Ashley, where either Ashley will tell me a story or I'll tell Ashley a story. And it will be conspiracy theories solved, unsolved, kind of a little bit of everything. At the $10 level, there's a Path Went Chilly mini. So we'll have Robin joining us for that. So we're really, really excited. I will link that in the show notes. So until next time, stay safe and remember, accept nothing, question everything. Music by Jobbers.